Hey, welcome to episode 109 of the Linux Lugcast. We're an open podcast / lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, and we encourage everybody to do so, all you need to do is install Mumble Client on your computer or mobile device, then go to linuxlugcast.com to get the server details, and then just join us on the server in the Linux Lugcast room. Also, if you do not want to participate, you can just listen by connecting to the Mumble server, going to the Linux Lugcast room, and just below that you'll see the listening booth room. If you need help configuring your Mumble client, there's a how-to on our site, linuxlugcast.com. Just follow the link at the top of the website. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints, and are unable to join us during the show on Mumble, you can send us feedback at feedback@linuxlugcast.com or leave a comment in our G+ community. You can check out the show notes on linuxlugcast.com, or linuxlugcast.com. for the direct links. And as far as feedback, we've checked, doesn't look like we had anything in either G+ or by email since the last show.
Yeah, okay. I'm living proof that we'll take anybody on the show. I just kind of showed up one day and haven't left yet.
Well, that's exactly what we encourage people to do. I mean, that's we'd love to have more people joining us. Okay, I guess go into my show notes first because we've already been talking about the Steam incorporating Proton into...
Do you want to introduce who's on?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm your host, 5150. Also, we have Honky Magoo.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Hello.
And last but not least, Netminer.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm certain you've heard the pre-show, but what we started talking about was just in the last week or so, Steam has unveiled this new project where they are incorporating Proton into their Linux client. Proton is a fork of Wine. We're not sure. I'll have to check. I don't know if you can install it independently of Steam yet or not. But it's optimized for games. And Steam has apparently realized a lot of the AAA games either are not getting ported to Linux or the ports are bad. so this is just the latest attempt to fix it so that you can play Windows games on Linux. Solus has tried to do this, and I haven't found one that works all that well. And also TrueOS, which is a BSD, is sort of based around. I've tried a couple times to get that installed. I know how to do it now, and I've just been too lazy to get one of the many projects I need to do, because TrueOS claims that they run Windows games faster than Windows runs Windows games. Now, we were talking with Honky before the show, and I think he was maybe surprised that there was a a Linux client for Steam. Now, there are games out there. Well, there are many games that are just for Linux, just as there's a few games out there that are on Steam that are just for Mac. The ones that are just for Linux usually are the little indie games. They're not the big, you know, AAA games. And most of the AAA games that have been ported over to Linux are not nearly as fast running on Linux as they would be running on equivalent hardware under Windows. In fact, I've had people tell me, don't even bother, just dual boot to Windows if you want to play games, and use Windows for games. So part of the trouble is right now, I mean, obviously, even with the Proton interface, shim or whatever you want to call it between Linux and the Windows games, takes some fiddling to get them to working. Not by us, but by people on the other end on Steam. So right now there's less than 30 games that they say are ready to go on Steam. However, you can, and we'll go over this in a minute, install Proton in such a way that it says, just try any Windows game and see if it works. Now the problem with that is it's not like even if you're dual booting, it's going to go find the Windows version of the game, another partition, and just run that. It's going to re-download the whole game. And you know, if you're talking a game that's several gigabytes, as a lot of your AAA titles are, at least on my connection, you know, we're talking days for one game. So whether it's worth it to say, oh man, it's not on the list, but man, I really, really want to see if that game worked. Of course, probably, you know, see if somebody else has tried it. I'm sure, and another thing we've been discussing, probably this would work a lot better if you had an i5 or an i7 rather than an old Core 2 to try to run games on like I am.
So I have an i7.
Okay, well, Joe's not had good experience with a couple games he's tried to install. I tried to do it with a small game, and it flat out crashed to a Wine or, you know, Proton rather error message. It looked just like the Wine. You know, couldn't find this, couldn't do this. Joe's tried it with a couple games, and they run, but they're incredibly slow. You know, they're not. He says they're not worth playing.
Exactly, but the games that I've tried are both of the Vampire the Masquerade games, which is what is it? One of them is Bloodlines, and I don't remember what the other one's called. And I've also tried GTA Vice City, and none of them have been playable.
Okay, so there's no point trying GTA 4. Well, you know, probably somebody's working harder on GTA 4, but it's not on the list. A couple of ones I saw, I think, are, well, I can go right to the games, I guess. I've got the link here just a second.
Yeah, if I remember right, Star Wars Battlefront 2 is on that list of playable games, but isn't that the one that Amazon released to Android?
Yeah, is that the old Battlefront 2 or the? Yeah, I think, you know, it's confusing because I think there's two Battlefront 2s.
I'm not sure.
I mean, that may not be the one that came out just this last year. I mean, I'm looking at things you might enter. Doom, Fallout Shelter, which runs under Android. Magic the Gathering, those from 2012 and 2013. Mountain Blade, Payday, Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl, Tropico 4, Warhammer. So yeah, not hardly anything on here that's very new or very process. And that's not all of them. That's just the ones I picked out that I recognize. Some of them I have, some of them I don't. None of these that are on the list are ones, you know, I'm just saying, oh, I have to play that right now. Let me get it installed. But probably try some of those like Payday and Mountain Blade, just to see how they work.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back through and see if there's a way to, like, set the DirectX or anything like that on there.
And, you know, I think, Joe, you went over it really well just before we started the show, but, you know, just let me run down the page. You know, assuming you already have the Steam client installed on Linux, go to the top left of the menu, click on Steam, and then on Settings. And then you want to go to Account. And about halfway down it says beta participation, and default is no, and you want to click change and say yes, you want to see it's Steam beta update is actually what you want to select, and then Steam will restart down. Fairly small download, takes a little while, a few minutes. Well, that's on my slow connection. You're probably immediate for most people. Then you need to go in settings again, and you can select Steam enable Steam Play for Spread titles. That would be those 27 games. Right now, they're in the list. Or enable Steam Play for all titles, where you can try to play all Windows-only games. Unfortunately, you know, you'd think that set it up, there would be an asterisk next to those titles that are, you know, whitelisted, verified, or whatever, but it doesn't look like there is. You'd have to go back to the current list. And it's gonna restart then again, like I said, any Windows games that you want to try are going to be downloaded to your Linux partition. And of course, if they don't work, then you've wasted the time downloading and the probably if you have the space, leave it there, you know, cross your fingers, eventually becomes playable. So that's all that's involved with that, but, yeah, and that's been wildly publicized all across the internet. You probably have any tracking of Linux news, then you probably heard about that before. But if you
listen to any other podcasts, they've all mentioned Proton. Or at least the Linux-based ones that I listen to have all mentioned Proton.
It wasn't mentioned on Tilts.
Hmm?
I said it wasn't mentioned on Tilts.
Yeah, I mentioned it on Tilts, didn't I?
Did you?
Yes.
No, it must be behind.
And I was just curious. I tried to see if I could just install Proton natively on Linux, and it's, or sorry, on Solus, and it's not in the repos.
There is, it might not be in the repos, but I know that there's a GitHub for it, so you should be able to pull it from there and install it that way.
Okay, we're talking about that, you know, what, is this, you know, would it work outside of Steam for games that you, that you're not downloading via Steam, or, you know, though that's a very small segment of the market anymore, or,
well, like, you know, I said, it's also a fork of Wine, so it's, the fork's not far yet, so mostly what you can do with Wine, you can do with Proton, I'm sure.
Right, I didn't know. Obviously, it's optimized for, I assume the main reason is because it's optimized for games. I don't know if it's going to make something like Microsoft Office run any better or run at all. I don't care to try to find out. Okay. I don't know what else is to say about that. This one, mainly posted for the benefit of Netminder, though anybody wants a very compact OS. Warren Davis, which I'd never heard of before this week, they were talking about him a couple days ago on Cash Planet. Apparently, he's suffered from some mental problems for a while and recently took his own life. But the main upshot is that he created this Temple OS, which I guess has sort of an Amiga-like interface. The ISO download is 16 meg, which I thought might be of interest to Netminder. Apparently that OS does not have any kind of Ethernet support, but there is a fork called Shine. I've also put the GitHub for that on there, that does have Ethernet support, though it's kind of like Arch. You know, you get in, and then you're going to have to jump into some config files to get the Ethernet up and running. It's not like, you know, you turn the computer on and get straight on the web. Like I said, Mr. Davis apparently was very religious, at least in his own concept of that, but had also apparently put up a lot of videos where he sounds quite a bit unbalanced to a lot of people and downright offensive. So, you know, but, you know, there's been things like this before, you know, do you want to not use the software because the creator has done or said some distasteful things? Back when we played with the Zip-It, the best build for it, you know, one that worked far and better away than anything else that I found, had some stuff in there that was, you know, unnecessarily offensive to some folks. Well, to about anybody who would read it. And you say, well, I'm not going to touch that because that, you know, that guy obviously has some opinions that offend me. And I don't know, there was a driver or something for some gaming hardware a few years ago. I think it was Windows. And it really, really worked. But I said, yeah, everybody can use this unless you're a member of this particular faith, and then you're not allowed to download it. And a lot of people said, well, no, because of that, we won't use it. So I am not at all advocating, any of the opinions or lifestyle of Mr. Davis. If he can write his own operating system, this is not a Linux port. This is its own thing. Public domain rather than open source, if you want to look past the man and the creator and are just worried about the software, then this, and you have a use case for something really, really tiny, I'd really be interested in seeing if this could be a ported ARM, what you could do with it. But so I just want to say that up front. And I've not seen all I've heard from word of mouth is, this guy had really weird opinions and put on really weird, posted really weird videos. I haven't seen any of that stuff. It just follow the links that were thrown out there on Oddcast Planet to the software, and that's all I really know about. But has anybody else ever heard of this guy? Like I said, I never knew anything about him until this week.
No, I haven't.
Well, I think its lack of compatibility with anything else is the real problem.
Temple OS is 64-bit and will not run on 32-bit hardware. Ah, man.
Okay, so it won't run on my P1 anyway.
Okay, I missed that. So yeah, I mean, it's cool, the thought experiment, might look at it in a VM, but yeah, if that's the case, I don't know what the use case is.
Now, what I need to find and keep looking for is 32 megabyte, 50 or 60 nanosecond SIMs. DIMs, whatever. Going from 32 megs to 256 megs would make a vast difference on what I could run on this box.
Now, did you ever actually get start trying to use Core OS?
I think I'm not enough guru to run Core. I mean the basic Core.
What about Tiny Core?
No, not enough RAM for Tiny Core.
Really? What's the, do you remember offhand what the minimum requirement RAM was for Tiny Core?
I think it's 48 or 64 megs.
Man, I thought Tiny Core would run on a pair of dirty socks.
Right?
Well, the deal is that I haven't played with that machine for a while. I've been pulling back. I've been trying to thrash my way to getting hooked up to sewerage and some other pain in the neck stuff. This loan application is giving me nightmares, literally.
What's that?
Got to fill out a loan application so I can get some repairs and connect it up to sewage. It's a great deal if they get it done, but it's driving me crazy.
Where are you at, Netminer?
A little town on the South Shore, just south of Quincy.
Caught about half that.
A little town south of Quincy on the South Shore.
Am I the only Linux podcaster in Texas?
Well, there's Tracy when he's home.
Isn't one of the guys from the Midcast in Texas?
And I mean,
you know, one of the ones I haven't started listening to yet is the Mintcast. I probably need to.
Joe, have you ever been to Texas Linux Fest?
I have not. I seriously considered going this year since it's about 3.5 hours away and I got some friends down that way. But there was no way I was going to be able to get the time off for it.
Yeah, I've been thinking maybe do that one year instead of one of the other ones I go to, since I've never been.
I'll try to set aside some time next year and see what happens. See, that means I have to use my vacation to go do it, and it also means that life doesn't get to decide what I'm doing on my vacation.
Right, that's one of the freedoms I enjoy, not having to consult with anybody what I'm doing, but there's trade-offs for that too. Okay, I don't know why on this box I have never installed a virtual machine, so I was playing with that the other night. So maybe I could look at Temple OS and look at some other things. Because I always had a virtual machine before. I don't know why I've never set it up. I was surprised to find VirtualBox in the Solos repos, because usually they're pretty much strict, at least open source, maybe not like Debian or something like that, or including non-open file formats, but I was surprised, because of course VirtualBox is free, but it's certainly not open. It's an Oracle product. But you can download it right from the repos. You do have to know which version of Solus. I didn't realize there were two releases. Either you have current or LTS. You can find that by issuing uname /R. Apparently I have the LTS version, so I'm a little behind current. And if you have LTS, it's sudo eo package install VirtualBox. Of course, put the spaces in the right places there. And if you've current, it's VirtualBox-current. And there's a link on the page. There's actually a page for this that I've included in the show notes. That also tells you where to go and get the extensions. The extension pack, which most people are going to need, and how to set it up so that you can use USB. So you actually have to put your users under VBox users, which usually is a step you don't have to do another distros to utilize USB in the virtual box. So I'm about halfway there. I haven't got the extension pack installed. Maybe by next show, at least get the virtual box installed. If not, any other part. I would like to try the, if I was going to try one, I would probably try the Shine version that does have Ethernet support, but it's like a Git package, and I'm not sure how to install a Git package in a virtual machine. I know how to do an ISO. So I was looking around, did not see any sort of tutorial on that. So if anybody shine light on that, feel free to write into the show. So you big dummy, this is how you do that.
I thought there was an ISO link in the maybe I'm on the Temple OS.
Yeah, the Temple has an ISO, but I didn't see anything in the GitHub.
All right, open up the wrong one.
I probably didn't go in every directory and check every file, but I mean, having a Git for an operating system, because I would think, unless it knew to put itself into a virtual machine, how would you do a Git install on an operating system that wouldn't wipe out the operating system you had?
What was the question?
The Shine version of this Temple OS, if I were to play around with it, like I said, the fork does have Ethernet support, but it's in a Git repo. And I was just wondering, unless the Git repo installs it as a virtual machine, I guess I could do the Git clone and then look at the files, see what they do. But I mean, I was kind of wondering how do you install a operating system from a Git repo?
By the looks of it, so I went to the README file, and then it's had a little thing at the very end saying building from source, and from what I can tell, you basically use QEMU to download everything and then create a image, if I'm reading this correct.
Okay. And like I said, I was working on it kind of late at night, so I didn't read it in too much detail. So I'll have to look at that and and see if I can wrap my head around it. Okay, next thing, real quick. What I think this is, I got an email from Pine yesterday thanking me for interest in the, quote, new Pine book, and showed me a link where the new Pine book was available for purchase, and it gave me a code to get in, and the specs in the email look identical to the Pine book I already have, so I'm thinking rather than this being a new Pine book, an automated system has actually reset the message from last year when the original Pine book was ready for purchase. Because if you'll remember, I did do some correspondence and talked to one of the engineers, or got email from one of the engineers responsible for the Pine book, and saying, yes, we're going to issue a more powerful version if we can. Maybe we will issue new boards you can just swap out and upgrade your existing Pine book. And when I got the email, I was hoping that, you know, it was at least, oh, there's a new version coming out based on the Rock chip or something. You know, I wasn't sure I really wanted to buy a whole new one for that, but analyzing it, I think just some automated system screwed up and sent the message from last year out again. Okay, the next thing, guys know I talked about this months ago. I had a chip PC, and Lyle from You Random podcast had mentioned that, you know, the GUI comes on the chip PC, which is the chip in a little about the size of a pocket calculator. You know, you've got the $9 chip, which was a competitor for, saying the Raspberry Pi Zero, and that enclosed it in a clear plastic case with a very basic keyboard and a touchscreen. Well, the GUI was also very, very basic. Essentially, you had the five apps that they included with it, and no way to install anything else. And Lyle mentioned, well, he'd installed, since his DOS is Debian, he'd installed XDE from the repositories to make it a more normal Linux experience. Well, I did that, and then I found out there's you can get LXDE on it, but there's no GUI installer and there's no terminal app, so there's no way to do anything with it once you've got LXDE on there. And so it's been sitting there, and I was looking for ways to reflash it and not found anything that wasn't horribly complicated and you needed a Windows box for. But apparently a bunch of people had been able to find that information. I mean, what I was looking for 6 months ago was essentially the basic answer was, no, you can't reflash the thing, or at least not without jumping through all these big hurdles. But Lyle also, I guess he did something to brick, well, not brick his, but make it unusable as well. Or at least all he can do is get to Emacs. And this is from the last U-Random podcast. Found links on archive.org to where people had taken the, and I didn't know there was an online flash deal that you, I think you had to, I don't know if you had to use a Windows computer, but, or there was, apparently there was a way to flash it if you went to the chip website. Of course, chip's gone, so now the web's gone. But people were actually able to download those tools, convert them to command line tools and various other things. So there are, there's, if you go to that, if you got a chip PC, you want to hit that link, download all those tools, because who knows, should be there forever, but you never know. Grab them while you can get them. So if you've got a chip and you want to restore it to stock like I do, then, and then go on from there, that's the place you need to go.
Yeah, you used to have to go to the website, and then it would reflash that way, but you're supposed to, like, plug it in through the USB and then, like, have, like, a paperclip that's, like, in between two jumpers, two pins on there, something like that, and then it'll, like, reflash it and reinstall the OS. I have, like, I have the chip, and then with a, HDMI little added board to it, and then I have the deck.
Yeah, you dropped out the end of the sentence there, Honky.
Oh, yeah, I basically have three chips. One I actually used and, like, played around with for a while. I actually was able to reflash it, and you can get, you can, the two ways that you could reflash it on the website back when they had the website was one with a GUI and one without a GUI. And the GUI, I guess, I don't remember what it was. That was probably LXDE. I played around with that for a while, and because I was going to try to put some emulators on it and run it that way. Actually, I tried to put. What is it that they have on the Raspberry Pi?
RetroPi.
No, RetroPi. I wanted to put a RetroPi on it, but I mean, it would probably would have been smarter just to put, just to find some regular emulator, straight up emulators, as opposed to trying to do RetroPi on it. But either way, yeah, it's. I gotta go and find that download off that link, because now I have three chips that I gotta want to do something with, and now I can't do anything.
Yeah, I guess I just never found that website when I was looking. I mean, I did search on Flash Chip PC. You know, maybe it was before they had the website up. I don't know.
Yeah, it was this hokey little thing. It required a plugin for your browser, and then you go to the chip website and then go to one of their pages. And like I said, you had to take, like, a paperclip and stick them in between two of the little jumpers on it, and then it uploads to it. It was really hokey.
And if you, well, you've just got the chips. You don't have the chip C, right?
Right. I have the regular chip, and then I got the Chip Pro Dev Kit, which has two chips in it. One that's, like, on a breadboard, and then the other one is just, like, the straight-up chip with, like, nothing attached to it.
Okay, I was going to say, for, Lyle also found this. For the chip PC that there were the keyboard is just really the, you know, little pop contact things, you know, where you've got this domed contact and you press down and that's a key. And he found like these stickers that you could put over them because the labeling is on the body of the thing. It's not on the key itself, and made it feel a lot more like a real keyboard. Not perfect, but a lot better than it was. So somebody's got a chip PC, then scroll back through the notes for urandom.podcast.info, and you should be able to find it. If not, contact me here at the show, and I'll make sure I can find it for you. Because if I get mine working, that'll be the next step.
You could probably just contact Urandom. I think it was Taj who did that. It's the did that to his pocket chip.
I want to say it's Lyle, because Lyle was using it to configure his network that he has, where everybody up on the hill, where his I guess his family has a compound, more or less, or a hill where everybody, you know, a bunch of houses in the same family, but only able to get internet access at the bottom of the hill. And so they sort of daisy chained Wi-Fi from one house to the next. So I was thinking, maybe I'm wrong, but I was thinking it was Lyle who was saying, I could, it's been a while. It hasn't been a while because I just listened to the episode, but wanted to say it was Lyle, but I could be totally wrong. Only a couple more quick things. I went to that link that was provided to us, YouTube page that was provided to us for the how to build a siren or a horn, so I could get a Ghostbuster siren working on the hearse, and kind of did a on that page, there's a link to his friend who'd done pretty much the same thing. So, so I sort of did a combination, took some of the parts from one and some of the other. So right now I have all the parts to do that except for the main one, which is the soundboard chip from Adafruit that I did order off of Amazon. So that's kind of, and what that is, it's a, I think it's probably a little ARM computer, but essentially what it is a deal that you can hook it up to USB and load, you know, sound clip 1, sound clip 2, sound clip 3, and, you know, and I think you have like up to 6 pins that you could connect a discrete button to, and if you hit, you know, if you ground that pin, then you know, it play, you know, if you ground pin 1, then it plays sound file 1, and then, you know, goes out and through sound and connects like a horn, public address horn sort of thing. So yeah, I've got everything but the board itself to do that project, and probably coming from Adafruit, that's going to be one that takes a while to get here. The other thing is, and like I said, all I'm doing is links again this week. I really thought 3 weeks between shows I could actually do something real world. I did get, I don't know if I had it at the last show, but I have got the Monoprice 3P mini 3D printer, and well, it's for filament. It did come with this small loop of filament, which I assume is probably enough to print the test thing that's on the SD card that it came with, and I was hoping to get enough time at least today, maybe at least do that, not even hook it up to a computer, just you know, load the filament, put in the SD card, you know, make all the adjustments to make sure that the table's at the right height and all that, and things aren't going to run into each other, and then print the test, whatever the test shape is, and had a bunch of errands I needed to do today and did not get an early start on those like I wanted to. So that didn't even get done. So I've really haven't accomplished any real projects since last show. So I apologize for that. More because, you know, I want to get some stuff done and I'm not getting anything done. Okay, that's it for my links.
You know, I know what you're talking about when it comes to not being able to get stuff done, especially with the printer. I want to say now that my printer might be
we lost you again.
Ah, Jesus. Either way, I know how you're feeling about not getting stuff done. My printer's been pretty much just sitting here for quite some time now. I really want to get working on it, but just haven't had the time.
Well, I'm kind of excuses because I think it's probably the filament I had was wrong for the printer I already had, but what I need is 1.75 millimeter filament, so this thing is going to obviously print slower than a larger printer, and I think it was the 3 millimeter filament is what I had. I was so ignorant at the time I bought it, I didn't realize there was more than one size. So, and I've been ordered that off MonoPrice, and I would have thought it would have been here by now. This is on FedEx, not on MonoPrice, because it's been in the state here since the. And usually, if it's here in the state, I get it today, and they're showing, yeah, we'll deliver it Monday. But that's not a very good excuse, because I'm sure I've got enough here to print the test cube or whatever they've got on the SD card. Okay, Honky, you had some stuff on running Etherpad Lite in a Docker container.
Yeah, I actually set it up beforehand in a Docker container, but it was basically a container that somebody came up with to basically just test out the fact that they could run Etherpad in a Docker container. So I found this other one online, which I probably should have put a link to what I found, but I'll do that hopefully afterwards, where it is basically two containers, one with the MySQL database and then one with Etherpad, and then linking the two together. It also gave the it set up the ability to run some of the to be able to edit the settings file to be able to put like
You did it again.
Oh, Jesus. Where was I? Do you remember?
Something to do things like put something like, you know, I think you were talking about this. You were talking about the settings file.
Oh, so the stuff I found was, like I said, it's two different Docker containers that you link together, and it also gives the ability to edit some of the settings before the Docker container is created. So it just real quick, I'll run through the commands that it goes through, just hoping that it'll kind of better explain it, or I'll try best explain it as I go through. So one of the big things about being able to add in a username and password is having the ability to set up the admin page. So there's a default admin page where you can also add in plugins to Etherpad just through that admin page. Kind of go through the Docker stuff. So you would do, to set up the MySQL, it would have been docker run dash name. Then you have to get that Docker name. And then you do -e MySQL root password, and then you give a password for root on the MySQL database, and then -d, which runs at the background, and then the name of the container, which it's the name of the container, which is the HyperRiot RPI MSQL, because I'm running this on a Banana Pi once you have the
We lost you at Banana Pi.
It's Banana Pi running MySQL. I'm going to switch this button here a second. Hold on one second. All right, I'm going to try this, and hopefully it's any better. So I'm running a Banana Pi with that's running a CentOS and Docker. So after you get the MySQL Docker container up and running, you need to then create an Etherpad container and then link them together by running docker run dash d, and then dash name, and then the name you want to give for the Etherpad container, and then dash e Etherpad admin user. This gives you the ability to add what you want to name the admin user, and then dash e Etherpad admin password. Give the admin admin user a pass name, and then dash v opt Etherpad lite var dash opt Etherpad lite. Basically, I think that just that's the where in the operating system of that container that the config file is located, and then dash dash link MySQL name. So the name that you gave in the previous thing, whatever the name you gave to that MySQL database, is the name that you would put into there, and then you do semicolon MySQL dash p. And then 9001 semicolon 9001, which is the ports, and then the name of that Docker container, which in this case was Vic slash RPI dash Etherpad. Also, one of the things I should have put in there was just link to the all of the add-ons for Etherpad, because that was a big reason why I decided to go this way as opposed to the other way. So I had like a bunch of add-ons that I was playing around with, and I completely borked the thing. So I completely killed it, and then restarted up another container, restarted it all up again. And then I went and played around with some other stuff, and then like put a bunch of add-ons on there, and then it wasn't working right, I didn't like the way it was set up, so I took a bunch of the add-ons off. And then afterwards, it was if you remember, I boxed you, or I'm not sure if you heard, I boxed you earlier today about check the Etherpad. If you put something in there, try to refresh the page, because I've had issues with things disappearing. Well, that was just starting to just really, I was running into all sorts of problems, and it was starting to really annoy me. So right before the show, I just was able to completely wipe that instance out, and started up a whole new instance. Needless to say, I am really liking Docker. The fact that I've, like, just the speeded the amount of time it took me just to kill those two Docker containers and start up a whole new one from scratch was like no time whatsoever, just to get back up and running. It's fantastic. So I'm going to go back in after the show and probably play around with some of the plugins again, and hopefully I won't bork it again. But if I do, I can start another one. So that's what I've been up to.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and I definitely want to try that on my cloud server.
There are some really cool plugins. You had talked before that you wanted to be able to embed links. That was one of the plugins I had in there. There are different plugins for to be able to export it into Markdown, export it into HTML, like a better HTML. There's a way to do it now, but it's kind of funky looking. There's all sorts of other add-ons, like that whole top bar. One of the things that I tried out was that whole top bar kind of goes away, and it adds more of like the, file, edit, type of files up top as opposed to just the big icons. What were some of the other ones? Obviously, there's one for to be able to keep track of all of the pads and to be able to delete some of the pads. There's a whole bunch of them. Let me see if I can find that a link to that, and I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, I just missed the ability to, copy text between machines.
So you're just getting in the Docker now, or have you been using it before?
I've played around with it before, but I've never really done too much with it.
See,
Go ahead.
Now, years ago, I had Etherpad running on a server, but ever since I moved off of that server, the wheels come off with Node.js somewhere.
Now, I've been a fan of Docker for a while now. I know I've come on the show and talked about it before, but some of my favorite docs are the one for Plex, the one for Libresonic. There's one that I use in conjunction with PIA for VPN so that I can just push traffic through it. And I use that with an instance of Docker Chrome so that way I can have two IP addresses at the same time. And I know I've explained the reasoning behind that before because of network speeds. But I recently tried that project I was talking about a few months back where I was going to have the VPN Docker instance and then attach that to another VPN server so I could VPN into the one and it would automatically put my traffic through the other. And I haven't been able to get it to work yet. And I have to do a lot more digging before I'll be able to find out why.
Hasn't PIA gone to a highly expensive billable billing system?
They haven't changed my model. I mean, I'm still $40 a year.
Well, I'm going to have to look into it.
Yeah. Actually, don't forget to put the link where you originally came up with the how to do this.
Yep, searching for it now.
No, it looks like they still got the 40 per year plan.
I'll have to look into it. That may be worth it if I start working remotely. As I've said before, I'm thinking about getting some kind of portable device. And I'd definitely like to have some kind of assurance that when I'm on Starbucks or library or transit services, Wi-Fi, I'm not handing out all my data to everybody and his mother.
Right. Well, you really don't have to pay for a service if that is all you're concerned about. I mean, you can easily set up one at home that's encrypted, and that will be more than sufficient for going out in public.
Yeah, but the one...
But don't you need a dynamic DNS and stuff for that?
Well, what is it? Cisco routers? Hold on, no. Yeah, the Asus routers come with one. And you don't necessarily need one to be able to do it. You just need to have some way of getting your home IP address, and that's as easy as getting Dropbox and a little bit of scripting with cron to occasionally drop your home IP address, your ifconfig, into a file that you can receive anywhere.
Aren't there still free services that will give you a virtual static IP?
That I'm not sure about. I get mine from Asus.
Well, the dynamic DNS services is what you're talking about.
See, I'm lucky. My home IP is static.
And even if you don't have a static IP, it rarely changes, especially if you, you know, never turn off your router.
Yeah, well, that reminds me, I need to get into my router and do an update.
Oh, okay. This image is for, okay, I guess you did say you were running the Honky, you're running this on a banana pie, so I need to find the equivalent for Intel.
Which one's that?
The Etherpad Lite instance. This is actually a Docker for ARM, which those used to be few and far between.
Sound recording?
Press the wrong button somewhere. Fine, it was silent there for a while.
Okay. I think the British call that finger trouble.
Yeah.
It happened.
So, what were you thinking about for your portable device, Netminer?
Well, I'm thinking about either a laptop or a tablet. That is to say, a tablet that's been limited to Wi-Fi only.
Okay. Well, if you're planning on Linux on the tablet, do your research.
Well, the thing that I'm really worried about with the tablet is there's so many. I would stay with Android, but I'm afraid that I will run into the same problem you run into with Windows, is that Google will say, sorry, we won't support you after version, N.
Yeah, that does happen quite a lot.
I'd
That's what
say, look.
that's why I'm looking for a, well, a netbook, ThinkPad or something.
Well, I know I've made the suggestion before, but there's always the Windows hybrids, and then you get the best of both worlds, that netbook style with the tablet ability, and like the and you can put Linux on the Transformer T100 TA from Asus, and it's not the fastest device on the planet, but it is pretty good, and you can put 64-bit Linux on there. It's 32-bit Windows, but it's got a 64-bit processor in it.
Well, a friend of mine had one of those, and they had some problems with it.
I've had mine for a couple of years now, and I have not had any problems that were insurmountable.
Well, I think I'm a dinosaur, and I think I would tend to go to chunky but rugged. ThinkPad of some kind.
Yeah. Well, ThinkPad did make a netbook-like device. I think it's only 12 inches. No, it's 11.3 inches or something like that. It's the ThinkPad X120E, which was also a 64-bit processor, but it has a bit of trouble playing YouTube. On Linux, anyway, just because of the way the integrated graphics are, it's all on the CPU chip, and that was one of the early chips that was doing that.
And it probably would work better with Windows, but I know on Linux it has internet problems. With anything graphically intensive.
I'll have to see, because I don't really know what I can do. Right now I'm a bit computer poor.
Yeah, the X120E, if you're getting it without a hard drive on eBay, it's between like $40 and $50. The transformers you can usually get used in the $75 to $120 range.
Yeah, I've actually been looking at the A61 or like that era ThinkPad. I had this old hacky laptop, but one of the keys is given out, so and it's definitely not worth having it.
You should take a look and see what parts are running for it if you still want to use it, because a lot of times, especially with older laptops, you can find parts dirt cheap.
I would, but this machine has been through a hard life. My brother got it for free, and that's because the express card slot was killed, and he broke one of the memory expansion options on the inside.
Well, I am also going to mention again, take a look at Facebook Marketplace. Sometimes you can find really good stuff on there, really low prices.
Did you say Facebook Marketplace?
Facebook Marketplace.
Well, I haven't been infected by Facebook yet, but that might push me over.
Yeah, well, I got my laptop from there, and hopefully the person actually brings it, but I ordered Bricks mini computer, and it's not going to have a hard drive, and I think the power supply is bad, but I'm getting it for like $40. So even if I just end up pulling the RAM out of it, give me something to do for a little while, it'll be fun to work with.
Yeah, I'm looking... I was looking at that computer that, you know, that they were advertising on Indiegogo or whatever.
The MI that we were talking about a little while ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep going back to look at it again. Wait until I have enough money to do it.
Actually, my next computer purchase may well be a eSATA P enclosure.
There is always the Pine book, but what you do is watch YouTube videos, you'd have to add a set of headphones or something, because the speakers aren't for worth a darn.
Oh, and one other thing I suggest trying at least once, if there's a college or a university or anything like that anywhere near you, at the end of the semester, go dumpster diving.
I will look at it, and since this may not happen this winter, I may see if the MIT flea markets are still around.
Yeah, and become known as the guy who will take the old computers away, because I am surrounded by computers that I got for free because people thought they weren't good for anything anymore.
Well, I picked up practically new computers from dumpster diving in the past. Just finding them, and then, you know, you hook them up and, oh, look, it's a bad power supply. I switch out the bad power supply, and I've got a fairly new computer that works great.
Well, I'm not, you know, if I got serious about this, I would even think about a refurb on Micro Center or something.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick up my own at the time. I always regretted I didn't grab the PDP-11 that the school threw out when I was in college.
My, actually, if you're still looking for a laptop, maybe I can get my my brother to sell one of his, because what he does is he works for various businesses and they'll do upgrades. They'll upgrade all their stuff and basically they'll throw away all their old stuff and you'll end up taking some home. Including laptops and a full server.
Yeah, as somebody said, even my old ProBook here has an i5 in it. It's an old 2400 series, but it does most of what I need.
You said the keyboard was going, you were missing some keys off the keyboard on one of that laptop?
One key was not working.
Which key is that?
This was the N key?
Ah.
As I said, this laptop, that's why I bought a laptop after being given that one, because I knew that its lifespan was somewhat limited.
One thing I did once was one of my laptops, when a couple of the keys and the keyboard started to die, I basically just dug out that entire section where the keyboard was, kind of cleared it out. I think I put some tape down there, and then I've got one of those USB floppy rubber ones, and I put that in there.
Actually, and maybe I should have mentioned this, let me see if I can get the box for a keyboard. I got a wireless keyboard and mouse set.
Yeah, I got some of those membrane keyboards. Of course, I didn't spend any more than I had to on them. Throwing my go bag, and they'll work, but you know, you got to be terribly conscientious as you're typing on them to get it right. Then I got a couple small, you know, just regular keyboards, but mini size.
Well, I've got something that you may want to write down, folks. So Logitech MK235 wireless keyboard and mouse. The only real problem I can see with this is it has no lights on it.
There you go. If you're not opposed to using a external keyboard, that'll work.
Yeah. Also, as I said, it's a secondary machine. The only reason I started it up tonight is I was having audio problems, as usual. Now I also have to get myself a good headset and or microphone.
What you've been using all this time, it's always sounded pretty good. I mean,
well, it's the built-in on this machine, and I sometimes it gets flaky.
A built-in mic, that ain't bad.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking of getting to a dedicated one so that I can have a better chance of setting things up.
Right. Fifty, when you get that soundboard, and you should do an HPR on installing your Ghostbuster siren.
Oh, I'm sure I will. Of course, I'll talk about it here too.
Of course. Oh, did you see I put in the Mumble chat? It was just like the first one I saw was a Docker container for Etherpad.
Oh, cool. Thank you. I see it.
Gentlemen, apologies, but this old man is running out of gas.
Yeah, I think we covered most of our topics a while ago.
Yep, out of topic.
Well, I'll play us out then. This has been episode 109 of the Linux Slugcast. I've been your host, 5150. Also on the channel have been Honky Magoo.
Good night, folks.
Joe.
Love being on the show.
And we love having you. And Netminer.
Thank you, gentlemen. I hope everybody has a safe and fun weekend. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you at the end of the official end of summer when we come back. You know, same time, whatever. Have fun, guys and ladies.
And Joe, not the least reason I like having you on here, it seems to annoy Dan so much.
Yeah, that does make me smile.
Sometimes annoying people is one of the simple pleasures if they're the right people.
Okay, our next recording date will be the 21st of September, 2018. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server. And for the bot module to find the next recording date, all you need to do is type .ns in our IRC channel, which is on Freenode, hash Linux Slugcast. We would also like to thank 000 Web Host for our web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give special thanks to Kay Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years. Thank you and good night.
Hello, Honky.
Hello, Netminer. How are you, sir?
Oh, fair to middling.
Even 50.
Are you feeling well, 50?
Guys, remember when I log on, it takes me a minute to switch everything over to the headset from the built-in audio. So yeah, I'm feeling great.
Well, I'm just going to have to sit down here. Everybody showing up near on time, I mean, this is a miracle.
And I'll save it for the show, but Netminder, I've got some links I think you might be particularly interested in. And just to say it, if it hasn't been mentioned already, has nothing to do with Linux, but rest in peace, Senator John McCain and Burt Reynolds.
Absolutely.
We ain't done much talking.
And tore myself away from watching season two of Iron Fist, which just dropped last night. So
I didn't realize.
Yep, I'm gonna try not to binge watch too many of them because I need some sleep night.
I've been watching that YouTube Red show, Impulse. It's pretty good. Not great.
Yeah, I'd read for a while. I never really watched any of the shows, mainly just to get rid of the ads. And I meant only do it for a month trial and then never, you know, went for a few more months, you know, forgetting to cancel it, finally canceled it, because not having ads wasn't worth what I was paying per month.
Well, since YouTube's my TV, it's worth it to me.
I mean, I pay for the no ads on Hulu, but that's mainly because I kept getting ads and it would take 15 minutes to get through the ads because of the stuttering.
Hey, 50, was that you that was ordering the mini computer?
Yes. MIPC or my PC?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still probably about a year out from getting here.
Really? Because I thought they were supposed to be shipping, what, this month or early next month?
I don't know. I was thinking it was longer than that. We'll see if it shows up. I got that and the and the new Atari console.
Well, the only thing I've gotten off of Indiegogo that I'm waiting for that should be here like this month or next month is the my wife wanted the Sound Hero Bluetooth speaker.
Joe, did you ever have any luck with that NVIDIA driver?
Hell no. I've been through so many different write-ups on how to get it to work. I don't even know where to go from here.
That sucks.
Yeah, I hate that. I don't run into so much with Windows, but so much with Linux, but all the time with Windows, you get this one strange error, and then you go out looking on the internet, and you find 50 different answers, and none of them work.
Yeah, oh. I guess I'll keep looking. I heard about like one distro where hybrid graphics is working, but it's that Deepin Linux from a Chinese company.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
I don't think Deepin would scare me quite so much as Red Flag, but still.
Yeah, maybe just, you know, try it out and see what happens, then nuke it again.
I actually tried Deepin at one point because they have their own UI going, and it's a nifty little system, but at the same time the fact that somebody earlier this year do an audit on Deepin or something like that to see how much was actually phoning home, and there was actually like a great deal phoning home?
Well, no, they found something in the App Store that was sending information back to China, and the developers came back and said that yes, we do send information on what people download from the App Store back to us, so we know what people want and what people are getting.
And that's actually reasonable. So maybe it'd be worth a shot. Like I said, they have a nice little UI there.
Yeah, and like I said, I could just set it up real quick, test out the hybrid graphics, see if it works or not, and then try and dig, if it does work, try and dig in and see how they're doing it, and I can always nuke it again.
Right?
Yes, it's all fun and games till the secret leash show up in the middle of the night.
Has anybody tested out Proton yet?
I have. In fact, I've got the link in the show notes. But I did use the option, just install any Windows games and we'll try it. And the one I installed, a small one, and it didn't work. So.
Well, I've installed a couple, and they all like start playing. But there's so much lag that it's pointless to play. I mean, Vampire, The Masquerade Bloodlines was unplayable. And it's an older game. And it just stuttered and you couldn't move the mouse and it was really bad. But there's a couple of things that I can test out to see, because I've been using Ubuntu, and I know that a lot of things you do, the GNOME shell just starts eating processor. So I'll try it again under LXDE and see what happens.
Yeah, that might be the trick. A lot of people say GNOME is, or not GNOME, Ubuntu is the, at least that's the distro they test on. Now, the games that you installed, I guess we probably should keep that for the show, but all this going in the recording. The games that you installed, were they on the list?
No, they were not. No, the list is actually pretty short. I mean, that's only, what, 30 games or something on there right now that are supported?
Yeah, I understand they're trying to, you know, they're doing testing and all that. But, of course, you know, with thousands of titles, of course, I'm sure they're going to try all the AAA games, you know, so that might be, you know, narrow that down to 100. But at the top end of those are going to be ones I can play on either platform on my hardware. I mean, I'm sure a lot of stuff, you know, runs just brilliantly if you've got an i7 and a brand new video card.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I know it's supposed to be a fork of Wine, but I'm not seeing anywhere, and granted I haven't looked online to see how anybody else has done it, but there should be a way to change your settings, you know, windowed mode, non-windowed mode, the different drivers that you can use, but I haven't seen any of it. It's basically install and play.
Yeah, I could guarantee you it's Wine, because the game I had flat crashed out, not, you know, you could definitely tell it was the Wine XP looking error message. I think a lot of this, they're wanting it to be a community effort.
Well, from what I understand, there are now thousands of games that users have tested out with Proton and verified that will play, and different ways that you can get them to play well. So I haven't gone through any of those write-ups either.
Now, is there a way to use Proton outside of Steam? In other words, if you've got a Windows game that's not a Steam title, has anybody worked on that?
How would you do that? Just grab an image off of a game disc and load it into Steam like you normally would, and then try it with Proton?
Well, I mean, can you install Proton independently of Steam?
Not that I'm aware. I mean, I went through the whole Steam and turned on the beta mode and then went in and turned it on so that you could do any Windows game.
Yeah, it's the same thing I did. Tell you what, since that's one of my topics, why don't we go ahead and start? I think we're all here. I'll even volunteer to host this week. Crickets?
Did you look over the new script?
Well, I've got it.
What's
here.
That?
I've got your Ethernet page.
Etherpad?
Etherpad page up. I didn't realize the script had been changed. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of redid it a little bit. But, I mean, we don't have a stream right now, which I should really get a hold of Father Finch and just ask him what's going on with that. But, I mean, the only people who followed the stream anyways was Jay Lindsay and Kay Wisher, as far as I know. I just kind of reworded some of the things. I change whatever you want. Let me know what you know. Just if you want to just change whatever you want, that's fine, too. I don't care. Just to try to make it more fit to what's going on right now, so...
Well, I do know how to read, so I think we're probably good.
I was more about just asking your opinion on the changes.
I just fixed your typo, but other than that, I think we're good.
Excellent.
And before we start, I checked both G Plus and feedback links. I did not see any new feedback since last show.
No, I haven't either. I've had like one person who's emailed me twice about wanting to add something to our website about he apparently wrote an article about getting away from Google. I haven't read the article, and I had no desire to add something like that to our site, so I didn't respond to him. Plus, it also seemed like he basically sent that out to a bunch of people, because the bottom of the email read something like, email me back, stop, or something like that to stop getting these emails.
Right, you might meet him halfway and invite him to come on the show and talk about it. You're right, I don't see why we would post some random article, but everybody's welcome to come on the show.
Oh, absolutely. I was thinking about that. I didn't have much of a chance to go through the actual article to see if it's even Linux related.
Well, that's true. Just because it's Google doesn't mean it's necessarily Linux related. He may just take a shotgun effort. Everybody might be tangentially concerned with it.
Right. Instead of using Google Docs, use Office 365 or whatever. I mean, it's not you know, Linux related, but it's getting away from Google related, which, you know, depends on where you fall on that subject.
Tell you what, I'll be back in just a minute and get started.
Okay. Surprised to see Flying Rich's name leaving the server, because he wasn't there for tilts this week, was he?
Alright, I switched to LXDE and tried out the same games and same issue. Still just won't play. Unplayable.
So I know 50 will probably get into this later, but what do? You basically, you install Steam on your computer, and then you download games through Steam that are meant specifically for Windows, and then run them through this Proton?
Well, what you do is you go in, you download Steam, and then you go to Settings, and then you turn on Beta Mode, and then Steam will update. And then after the update, you go back into Settings and go to the Proton section of it and tell it to do any Windows games instead of just the supported ones. And then it'll update again and restart. And then anything that's in your library, where if it's a Windows game or a Linux game, it will now appear in your library and you'll have the option to install it. And it'll automatically run through Proton.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be a lot cooler if the games worked.
That's very, very true.
Sorry about that. I've been having a little trouble with my acid reflux all day, and the normal medicines haven't done much for it, and just opened a beer and drank about half of it, and that exacerbated the problem, so I'll probably leave the beer off until I'm done talking. Okay, I'm pretty sure I can get through the intro now, though.
50, I think your mic is a little bit too close to your mouth or something, because all of a sudden it's just, it's really loud.
How's that?
A little bit better, but still a little loud.
How's that?
Beautiful.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.